Canucks Central Wednesday. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by Grip Auto and Tire. Quality service you can trust at 14 locations to serve you. Today's the day. Playoffs. You hear that, Sat? Everybody's talking playoffs in Vancouver today.
They're not talking about the game.
Nope.
They're talking about playoffs.
They're talking about playoffs.
Already.
Because you know why? That is the expectation for your Vancouver Canucks this year.
Playoffs?
Jim Mora knows. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Today, training camp officially opened, I guess. Mm-hmm. And players were going through it for testing. Tomorrow, they'll be in Whistler on the ice. Getting some scrimmages going, and Sunday pregame schedule begins with a split squad matchup against Calgary Flames.
We are here. It has begun.
So here's what we're going to do on the show today.
We're going to talk Canucks.
Yes. It's normally what we do.
Yes.
Sat did not bail on me today, 5 minutes before showtime.
No, I was here
to
on time
a,
today.
A slice of pizza.
I didn't go.
I mean, you were on time yesterday, too,
I
technically.
I was on time.
It's just. You abandoned me 5 minutes before the show.
I'm sorry I wasn't here to hold your hand before you turn your microphone on before the show.
You know I need all the help I can get.
You got to turn the mic on.
Yes.
Man. Now you may speak.
It's, but yeah, you didn't abandon me today, which was nice.
Yeah.
It makes me feel that much more comfortable.
I took care. I had a really good lunch.
Yeah,
like a pretty had a substantial lunch. So okay. So I'm good. I'm good.
You're good. You had a big lunch.
I had a big lunch. I'm going for dinner at 7.
It was more than like your piece of toast, two eggs, and a tomato.
It was
and half an avocado.
It was I had appetizers and I had a main.
Yeah.
So and
we need a brunch spot in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking right into the camera for the Twitter listeners and watchers. We need a brunch spot in the city that sells the Sat.
Oh.
Which
this is basic.
A piece of toast,
yeah.
Two eggs,
avocado.
A tomato,
yeah.
And half an avocado. A whole avocado or half?
Half an avocado.
Yeah.
It's too much. One avocado is too
yeah.
much.
Yeah. A whole one is a lot.
Yeah. But half an avocado is.
They wouldn't even need new ingredients, I assume. They just make a mix of it.
That's it.
How do you season your eggs? Do you just like salt and pepper?
Salt and paprika.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A little paprika?
Paprika.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. That's usually the way
you
I go about it.
You a big paprika guy?
Yeah, it's nice. Mm. It's nice. Paprika's good.
You would really enjoy Hungary.
Yeah, hey? A lot of paprika and everything.
Man. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's the home of paprika.
Is it?
It is.
All right. Well, now I got to go to Hungary. Well, I had a good lunch. I had chicken tacos.
Wow.
I had a dynamite roll. Plus, I shared a blackened chicken Caesar salad. So, I ate a lot. So I'm good. I'm good. I didn't eat a slice of pizza before the show. I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a big lunch.
Yes. I told you it was substantial. I'm good.
It's a big salad.
Mm-hmm. Big salad.
Nah, that's a Seinfeld thing. So, okay. A lot of Canucks spoke today. We heard from Bruce Boudreau. We heard from JT Miller and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, also Thatcher Demko, and the captain, Bo Horvat, who doesn't want to be asked questions about his contract anymore.
No.
Well, I shouldn't say that. He said, you may as well stop asking me because I'm going to give you the same answer all the time.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not worried about it. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I can put it aside and it'll work itself out. And that was that.
That was that. So,
and I'm sure he'll never be asked about it again.
So like Friday?
Yes.
The next time he speaks? Has there been any update?
What's going to be great is when ultimately something does happen, and you know, then he'll talk about how hard it was to be asked about it all the time. But in the moment, they're like, yeah, it's not a big deal. But even JT himself was like, it's not a big deal. It's fine. It's fine. And then when he signed, he's like, yeah, it was going to be tough to head into the season without it being resolved.
It should have been there, you know. It was reported on Canuck Central that the first offer started with a 5. Is that true? I'm not talking about the contract. Okay.
All right.
continued. Kevin Woodley will join us. His take on the Canucks goaltending situation and hour 2. What are the major storylines heading into training camp, the storylines to care about. So that's coming through on hour two. But let's start this opening bit of the show, now that we've wasted a bunch of time, on Bruce Boudreau and what he spoke about today. So, like, there's a couple of things here. There always is from Gabby, loves to talk. And
gift of gab.
I guess, you know, one of the things that is sort of apparent with Boudreau, but just sort of lingers in the background, is his contract status. He did not get the extension. Playing through the option is factually a lame duck coach because he does not have a contract beyond the end of this season. And so when it comes down to playoffs, Sat, ultimately that's Bruce Boudreau's job here and maybe his future as well with the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, we kind of take-shopped this take with Don Taylor earlier this week when talking about which Canuck is facing the most pressure. Who has the most on the line this season? And I'd argue there is not a single player or person in this organization who has more on the line this season than Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah.
Bo's getting paid.
Bo's getting paid from someone.
Doesn't matter. He's getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
For all the talk about, you know, if they fail this season, the players pay the price. Well, it's not easy moving players, and we've seen it in many situations. I mean, you saw it with the Ducks to some degree. They moved some guys, but maybe didn't move some other guys that people thought they might end up moving, like Gibson, for instance. They realized it's hard moving guys that are good players and maybe some trepidation in doing so. You've seen it in Philly even with all the talk about how many big moves they're going to make, and lo and behold, they don't make that many big moves. A lot of key players they hold on to because it's hard to move those guys. But if this team fails and falters this year and doesn't reach expectations, there's no certainty or guarantee that any player is going to end up paying the price. We'll see, but no guarantees. We saw how hard it was this year for them to move players. GM's not going anywhere. The president is not going anywhere. It's the coach.
It comes down to Boudreau. And there was so much good that happened under Boudreau in the 57 games last year. But don't tell that to Patrick Alvin because it makes him angry at this point. If we've seen any anger out of Patrick Alvin. Wasn't good enough. We didn't make the playoffs, so let's stop talking about it. Boudreau, when asked about that and asked about that Alvin quote today, said, well, if there is one thing, it's that we rebuilt some belief within this team.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fair assessment. It was felt at the end of the year by guys like Miller, guys like Hughes. You know, it's kind of a trivial thing because a player can say, oh, we figured out our culture a little bit, and then you start losing games again. I guess we lost it.
Right.
But it did feel like they got over a bit of a speed bump there and started doing things that lead them to more success. And I don't think you can overlook that. So to say that the 57 games that Boudreau coached last year don't really mean anything because they fell short of the playoffs, I think is a bit disingenuous, but it also won't matter if this team gets out of the gate and is anywhere near as bad as they were for the first 25 games last year.
My take from that is that the organization, or Alvin specifically, who said that, doesn't want them to be satisfied with how the season ended. Doesn't want them to go home thinking, you know what, we did a good job, guys. Like, hey, pat ourselves on the back. It was a tough year. We got off to a bad start, but we almost made it, guys. Like, hey, good for us. I don't think he wants them to be happy with how that season ended. I think the point is the bar can't be, no matter what happened, whether it was a hellacious start, whether the worst luck in the world happened or whatever it was. Maybe you won 40 out of 57 games even, but guess what? It wasn't enough for us to get in. So let's not talk about this being a standard we want to hold. So I think that would be my guess on the messaging and the sense from management. As far as Bruce is concerned, here's where it's fascinating when it comes to management's perspective versus coach's perspective. What does management think long-term, big picture? You know, they think style and what we're going to look like and all those sort of things that go into it. What is a coach trying to do? Win a hockey game. just win a hockey game. And by that, I don't mean win one game all season. All they're focused on is the next game. We're trying to win this game. We're trying to win the next game. And then once this game is done, we'll try to go win the next one. It's all about winning the next hockey game, the game you're playing. That's all coaches think about. He even said that when asked about, will they play the same style in Abbotsford? He's like, well, I told Jeremy Colleton that don't worry about the style. You have to have success. That's what matters most. So my question more than anything is just winning enough? Mm-hmm. Is just results enough? Or does management want to see certain things in terms of having a long-term partnership with Bruce Boudreau? So my question with Bruce, even beyond having success this season, and yes, if they're super successful, no matter what, they'll still bring him back because you're not going to let go of a coach and win two rounds or something. But if it's a one and done,
pretty good.
Right. But if it's one and done, you know, make the playoffs, just get in and get out. Maybe they look at it and say, hey, I'm not quite sure this is our guy. Yeah. So the question is, does Bruce understand the assignment heading into this season from management? And what is that assignment?
Be like when Barry Trotz just like walked off into the sunset after winning the cup with the Washington Capitals. Like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to pay me all the money? Okay, I'm good. See you later. You are right. There is a sense of, because of the way last season ended, because of some of the comments that were made from management, you know, is this a relationship that can truly work long term? And that is something that will need to be answered this year when it comes to Bruce Boudreau. Now, look, a lot's going to happen over these next few days. We're going to learn a lot. Boudreau is going to trot out the lines that he has envisioned will potentially work for the start of the season right away here in training camp. But he did reveal a couple of things that he intends to maybe try from a line perspective. And one of the ones that I think is interesting to note, JT Miller and Brock Besser to remain potentially a duo. He sort of revealed that by saying, you know, if I'm giving Miller a day off, then Besser might get a day off too, because we want them to stay together. So, you know, there was different things that he mentioned that lead us to believe this is what's going to happen tomorrow. And when it comes to Miller and Besser, I said this a bunch last year. I really liked Pearson, Miller, and Besser together as a line. They had a lot of success. They had a real distinctive style that they played together that really worked. And so I can see why. It's like, well, we know that works, so maybe let's try to figure out the new pieces with the other guys we have.
Yeah, I would guess that's what it is. And as much as Bruce talks about trying different things, I think they want a baseline of familiarity, a baseline of at least we know this is going to work, and at least we know these guys are going to have some chemistry. So to your point, Besser and Miller mates make sense. We know that Miller has success with Besser, and it's an easy spot for Besser to come into the season and hopefully launch off and get off to a good start and be able to play well. The other revealing thing he mentioned was Garland playing the left wing. So if he's saying Garland's playing the left wing, how can we kind of view the other pairings a little bit? If we talk about familiarity, you could easily talk about Pearson playing with Horvat, and that being something.
Yep.
But that wasn't necessarily the marriage that Boudreau had for Pearson. It was more so with...
He would, like, Green kept those two together forever. Mm-hmm. And then finally Boudreau came in and was like, you know what? We're going to switch things up here a little bit.
You saw JT play with Pearson a lot.
Yep.
And they had a lot of success. And off air, you were mentioning you could easily see Miller, Pearson, and Besser just being a line, and you go with them. So I think Garland is interesting because do you play Garland on the left wing with Bo Horvat, or do you play him with Elias Pettersson?
Oh, man. I think so. If you are playing Garland and Kuzmenko on the left side, they're two right shots, both playing on the right. That would mean Mikheyev and Podkolzin are your other two right wingers. And
they're inverted. Like the wingers are playing their off sides.
Yeah. All four of those wingers will essentially be playing on their offhand, on their weak side, which is interesting.
Which creates more opportunities offensively, something that Boudreau's talked about, because your stick is more to the center of the ice as opposed to being towards the wall.
I get it with Kuzmenko because he's got the shot. I get it with Pods because he's got the shot. But Mikheyev and Garland aren't really shooters. They're not guys that can score right. off the wing with their shot. Like, Garland's never going to be a one-timer guy.
No, but the one thing I do like about Mikheyev on the wing, because of his speed, though, being a left hand coming down the right wing, being able to just dip in, he's going to be able to drive the net a lot
yeah.
with that. So, makes it a little bit easier.
So, yeah, that might make sense. With Garland, you know, he played a lot with Bo Horvat last year. We talked about that, you know. People keep saying Bo Horvat doesn't get to play with anybody that actually scores, and here he is playing with the Canucks' top point getter at even strength outside of JT Miller in Connor Garland most of last season. Could we see that again? Would it be a Garland, Horvat, Mikheyev type line? Does that make a ton of sense to have the offensively inclined Garland play with Horvat and Mikheyev, who may be taking more tough type minutes, defensive matchups against the other team's top lines?
You know, it's really interesting about how do you want to utilize Bo, especially with all the talk about JT Miller being, you know, and we'll get to the JT stuff about him wanting to be a better two-way player and all that sort of stuff. But are you looking to have a line that's a bit more defensive in his posture? Because if that's the case, then it's going to be obvious. You put Mikheyev and Horvat together, because that's Horvat's been getting a lot of those matchups, or at least would lean more in those matchups. But if you are not worried about that as much, wouldn't Mikheyev playing with Pettersson be interesting?
Right.
You talk about a fast player who's going to put teams on their heels. That's going to open up a lot of ice and possibilities for a player like Pettersson.
So if you are trying to figure out if Mikheyev does have more offense, is there a better player to put him with?
Nope.
Than Elias Pettersson?
Probably not.
I guess you could make the argument of Miller, but
he would create transition chances for them, something Pettersson's really good at.
Yeah.
He stretches the defense out. He puts a lot of pressure on them. He's able to create some space with his speed. If you're looking to, like you said, get more out of him offensively, I'd be really interested in trying him with Pettersson. And then maybe what you can do is go with Pettersson, Kuzmenko, and Mikheyev. And that way you give Kuzmenko a bit of a soft landing, having one of the Russians with him on his line at least.
This is one of the interesting things that we'll get to find out over the next couple of days. Training camp starting in Whistler tomorrow. How would you line it up? You can let us know on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Getting a few things heard from Bruce Boudreau on that. And he also mentioned just how high he is on Elias Pettersson having a much better season. There was a couple of things on that I want to touch on. But JT Miller spoke. And what I like about Miller is he will give you stuff if you ask him the right questions, right? And we had that when he spoke with us after the contract was signed, and he came on Canuck Central and was really engaged about playing center, playing the position, liking playing from his defensive end, and being a part of the breakout more often as a centerman rather than what his role was as a winger. And one thing about Miller that has come out after the contract, his defensive game isn't really there. He's a guy who produces a ton, power play specialist, a lot of secondary assists, not great defensively. And last year, you have to remember, last year was Miller's first real time in the NHL playing full-time center. Really playing it. So is it fair to cut him some slack? Miller talked about how he can get better defensively, what he needs to do to get better defensively at the center position.
Well, obviously from a point total perspective, that's going to be hard to do. Like I've said to you guys a million times, I'm not really evaluating myself on points. Is it nice to produce? For sure. But I think I could be a more consistent player at, you know, 200 feet of the rink. You know, maybe giving up a couple less to get a couple more type of mentality. And some of my favorite players in the league are 200-foot centermen, so I think that I want to try to push myself this year to really care a little bit more about my own end. And I always do, but, you know, I evaluate myself honestly, and I think I have a little bit more to give in the defensive end and, you know, being more fresh for that end and just making sure I, you know, take care of there before I go the other way. But you know, I'm not putting an expectation on stats or points for me. Like I say all the time, if I play well and play solid and have my feet moving, I think I'll produce. So I'm just trying to focus on that.
So there is JT Miller on playing better defensively. It was a lot of self-reflection. I got to be able to move my feet. I can't watch the puck as much. Because sometimes when you're playing the wing, you can be a little bit stationary, right? You're making sure you're on your point man and...
You have less responsibility.
You have much less responsibility.
Sometimes you're just meant to stay in your spot.
Yes.
Just take away that pass. Just be, just to occupy that space.
Yes. And when the puck comes around your way, you better make sure you get it out.
Yes.
Hit that pass with the centerman streaking through the middle of the ice, whatever it may be in the moment as the situation plays out. But yes, your responsibilities are far fewer when you're playing the wing compared to center. And I just, you know, that's going to be early on a big storyline, because if Miller is, as he says, able to, or as he wants to, able to play better as a 200-foot game, you know, that's just another part of the entirety of the Canucks roster that gets more solved, that allows them to be a better team that controls play more often.
Well, because I'm not sure they actually have a matchup player. But if you have no concerns at all about them matching up against anyone, then you can just roll your three lines.
Yeah.
You don't worry about it a lot at all. So I think that's kind of where you want to get to. It's like, JT, you're not afraid of playing him in any situation. They've been playing him the whole time. But if you're not concerned at all about who's out when, that changes things. And as far as JT's concerned and him being a lot better defensively, I think there's a big chance, to your point, just by familiarity with the position, not having played in a long time, that's going to help him out. But he has an understanding of what he needs to do, which I think already is important. And I noticed that people try to ask the question about turnovers and making better decisions, and that's obviously part of his game. But to me, that's not the biggest issue he's had defensively. The turnovers can be bad. The blind passes in the middle, we've all seen the lazy plays and stuff like that. That can and should get better. But that's not his problem.
Yeah.
It's the space that he doesn't occupy, the pressure that he doesn't put in. And he mentioned as the season went on, he realized him being more available for the pass, being deeper in his zone to get the puck and help it come out of his own zone, helped their transition game, helped him defensively, helped him create and get set up offensively a bit more. So I think he's got a real good understanding of the things he's got to do to be better. Sometimes you just hear guys say, I got to work harder, or they just say, like, I got to make better decisions with the puck. That's not really it. It's more about the lanes you take, the lanes you take away, the pressure you put, you know, the battles you have in those spaces where the puck comes in and taking a guy's stick away sometimes to not be able to get the pass. Those are the types of things that he was talking about, which really impressed me, because, or I wouldn't say impressed me, but made me feel good about his chances to be a better two-way player.
And, you know, a lot of it comes down to supporting your defenseman down low.
Yep.
You know, for the defenseman that moves away from the front of the net. What are you doing to, you know, either now occupy that space, make sure somebody else is not getting open for a potential pass out in front? There's just so many responsibilities that you have to do as the centerman.
You're a center. I mean, the name itself should tell you. It's protecting the center of the ice defensively and attacking the center of the ice offensively, and controlling the center of the ice through the neutral zone.
I think so much of, you know, what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Fluto Sinjawa, when, you know, he talked with Jim Montgomery, so much of your ability to transition the puck and create offense starts from your own end, and it really funnels through the middle of the ice. And I think that's where JT is super important to this team. But, you know, one thing that I do wonder about, Sad, is, okay, here's your 99-point guy. You paid him $8 million a year because he's a 99-point guy. How much do I want him to focus on his game defensively and maybe get away from what we just paid him $8 million for, and that's just to produce points?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want him to change too much of the player that he already is.
No, I understand. But, I mean, what's the baseline here?
Yeah.
So, if he becomes, like, a 50-point player, and it's like, all right.
That's
a problem.
Yeah.
But if he's, let's say he's 70 points, but he's good defensively. Not amazing, but good defensively. You probably win more with that player, don't you?
I guess so.
Now, I think the biggest part about JT Miller, even though he was tied in even strength scoring with Garland, he's going to get his points on the power play.
Yeah.
He's going to get a lot of points on the power play as long as he's there. So I don't worry too much about his production. But if he produces a little bit less at even strength, but allows less, I think that's worth it. And also, when it comes to critical games down a season, getting into the postseason, those are the times when that type of player is worth more than a empty or I wouldn't say empty calorie because that's unfair to how good JT was, but a guy who scores 99 points but can be a liability in his own end.
Coming up, Kevin Woodley is going to join us. His take on the Canucks goaltending situation. Some interesting stuff came out from Thatcher Demko as well. We'll get into that with Kevin Woodley. Canucks preseason coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Black & Lee. Suiting up has never been easier with suits and tuxedos in a modern wide range of colors, styles, and fits. BlackAndLee.com. Kevin Woodley next on Canucks Central. Canucks Central in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Canucks Central is brought to you by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you can trust, and 14 locations to serve you. Thatcher Demko, always enlightening hearing from Demko. Felt like last year was about him being a starter in the league, and this year is about him fully ascending into the elite goaltender sort of conversation in the NHL.
He wants to be in that discussion. And what's interesting, what I like about the way he framed it was, yeah, I established myself as a starter in the NHL, but not as one of the best players in the league, and or one of the best goalies in the league. And when we looked at some of the underlying numbers from ClearSize Analytics, and we'll talk to Woodley about that, he's mentioned that he ranked amongst the best goalies by those metrics. But Demko doesn't think that's good enough. He still wants to take it even higher than that. And I think that just shows you the mentality that he has, and that he's not going to settle for just being a starting goalie.
And, you know, for as much as we see Thatcher Demko as one of the best goalies in the league, I'm sure if, you know, you head over to NHL.com or NHL Network when they're ranking the best goalies in the league, I don't think Demko was kind of a top 10 guy, not a top 5 guy as we would think of him here in Vancouver. So I would imagine there's still some work to be done on that front to be seen as that type of goalie around the NHL more so than just here in Vancouver. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Kevin Woodley. Joins us every Wednesday, the goalie guru, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. What's happening, Woodley?
Not much. I think I think just given that you just mentioned the NHL.com and network ratings, I think I should throw out the caveat that I get no voice in that whatsoever.
Yes.
I am not staff, so every once in a while, they'll do things like periodical, like quarterly Vezina stuff, and some of them will be a little, oh, I should probably be careful what I say here, but some of them are crap. And then I get lit up in my messages about how could this happen, and I'm like, well, two things. One, I don't get a vote. I don't get asked. And also, they don't use advanced analytics. They're not really allowed to. If it's not on the NHL site, they can't look at it. So what, Demko's 914 save percentage graded out like 16th in the NHL. And so I think that if you're only using metrics like that, you know, you might just rank him in the top 10. I've got him higher than that. And yeah, so I had to throw that caveat out there. Don't hold it against me when these rankings come out.
All right. That's a good public service announcement for those.
Yes. I appreciate the chance to just hold on. Don't be sliding into my DMs with those anger messages. Don't be sending the angry replies, and definitely don't be tagging me in angry replies, considering that those are my bosses that are part of putting them together.
How could you disrespect Demko like this? Anyway,
also, Josh, don't be clipping this and sending this to places that my bosses can see.
Fair enough. Fair play. All right. So on Demko, he talked today, you know, talked about his off season, ended up, you know, rehabbing his injury longer than he expected to. But yeah, what was this offseason about? Where is, you know, Thatcher Demko, where does he need to get better to take the step that, as he talked about, puts him amongst the most elite goalies in the NHL?
Well, it's funny because we went into last season and, you know, I remember saying, like, I don't think there's anything new for him. Like, it's not like there's technical elements of his game that need radical revamping. he'd learned all the sort of systemic things that Ian Clarke wants from his goaltenders. It was about A, execution, and B, consistency. And so, you know, to hear him talk about reviewing video and finding things that he thinks he can do better yet, you know, it's one of those moments where I'm like, damn, I wish we were back in the room, because I'd love to have a quiet little conversation about what kind of specifics, you know, those aren't things that you want to ask in that podium environment. Those are more one-on-one conversational things. And I'd be curious where those specifics are. Because when I watch him technically, the only thing I worry about, you know, is sort of durability and sort of preservation, just because, you know, I've talked about this before, like the movements are so fast. You know, that I don't know if it's a fair term, but it borders on violent. Just you watch him go in and out of those posts, you watch the post pop like 2 inches off the pegs and then settle back down when he goes into a reverse and then pops across to the other side. Like, there's just so much torque and power there. And so you worry about that a little bit. So I don't know if he's, you know, talking about managing his body and finding moments within there where maybe, you know, you approach it with a little less pace. Not that you ever want to back off of that. It's such an important part of the game for goalies, but you know, those are things that, you know, when we finally do get back into the room, you know, those are conversations I hope to have, to sort of just kind of get an idea where he's coming from. Because again, from a technical standpoint, we went into last season, I didn't think there was a lot that needed to improve. So maybe he sees things in the hot stretch that weren't there to the degree or to the, you know, level of perfection in terms of execution that they were, you know, in the quote unquote downstretches of the season. Maybe he found those moments and wants to hone in on those. He talked about, you know, the extra rest he was forced to take because the injury prevented him from working out as early, and that being a positive. Like, don't forget, you know, sometimes as creatures of habit and not superstition, I don't think in his case, but just, you know, we build so many things into our games as goaltenders and we think we need them. And it's not till we're forced to sort of peel them back that we realize we didn't. Like his first year pro, It took him, I think, more than half a season before he sort of recognized that he couldn't do all this pregame stuff as a pro. There just wasn't enough time. He was wearing himself out mentally and physically by showing up 3 hours to the rink early and going through this like complicated routine that he felt he needed. And so we started just coming in and having a coffee and doing his stretching, and things got better. So sometimes it can be mental things that sort of allow you to take the foot off the gas between the ears as much as anything to get through the grind of a long season. I thought it was interesting that he talked about, as much as the physical stuff, the mental grind. And it is. And, you know, as high as I might rank him, as, you know, Luongo said, top five goalie, as much as the analytics say he was, you know, top anywhere from top five to top seven. I mean, you take out the last three games when he was trying to play through the injury, and he was fourth in adjusted save percentage. So he's in that echelon. But he's right when he says doing it once isn't enough. Like, to stay in that elite class, it's year in, year out, right? Like, when you get to where Andre Vasilevskiy is now, nobody blinks when you run a 9-11 from mid-December to the end of the season. And Andre Vasilevskiy did, and I guarantee you half the people listening right now didn't even realize that. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you've done it year in and year out, and you've sort of proven that you're at that level. And to me, that's the next step. It's just consistency. And can you do it again? And one more year after that, can you do it again? If he does what he did last year, I almost guarantee you Vezina votes will follow this year. Mm-hmm. You know, GMs, you watch what he did against some of the big teams and some of the big buildings, against some of the big name goaltenders head to head. And GMs take note of that, but there's still a bit of a Jim Carrey fear out there. Like, we don't want to vote in the one hit wonder. So you sort of got to do it again. I think that'll come this year. And then the year after that, and then you have that conversation about being in the top five on a consistent basis.
Well, and you know, the other part about that is for any goaltender is being able to stay healthy for a full season as well. And he talked about how, you know, he was forced to maybe take a bit more time off than he wanted. And maybe that was a good thing for him because he's a guy that works very hard. And that's such a hard thing to be able to predict and be able to make sure that you do. But a big part of it is also getting through a full season and not having more than maybe a couple small little things. Because it's inevitable for you to feel it every once in a while, I'm sure, but not to have injuries that make you miss time.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, clearly, and then, you know, it's the mentality of, does every little tweak pull you out, or do you play through stuff? And Demko definitely played through stuff last year. And talking to some of his teammates, you know, you'll hear Ian Clarke use, and I think Thatcher used that word today, inspired. Like, The goal is to be able to inspire your teammates with your performance, to earn their trust, to inspire them that they don't have to worry about what's going on behind them. And that includes how you handle yourself. You know, do you show up to the rink with your shoulders sloped, ice bags all over your body because you're hurting, or do you just show up and you take care of all that stuff in private and show up and show that it's not affecting you? And it sounds like you played through, you know, played through a pretty good injury towards the end of the season. And I think he probably inspired a few of them in that regard. In terms of sort of making it through the year, you know, he talked about it, sort of learning to manage his rest and manage his minutes. And again, that's a process. That was his first year as a number one. And last year, you know, it's really easy to look at him and Saros because they were two of the top three sort of games played guys in the league. Only Connor Hellebuck was up there with them, and Helly had a tough year, and neither one of those guys make it through healthy. And so it's easy to look at that and say, man, we got to really back off his minutes. But don't forget, like, last year was unique, right? Like, post-Olympics, that was always, or what was post-Olympic break or supposed to be the Olympic break, that was always going to be too many games in too few days. I talked about it going into last season. You would have to have two guys to even survive that stretch and be able to play two guys. And they didn't have the luxury because that was also when Jaroslav Halak had a couple rough starts. And they had to roll them out there. They were chasing wins. And that was – so I'm in some ways you almost – you don't want to judge too harshly that period because it's not – a stretch of hockey that we're likely to see in any regular year, like in terms of how condensed that schedule was, you know, the final, however many months coming out of what was supposed to be the Olympic break. It just, that was too much hockey for one goalie to manage. And the other part that they're going to have to be really careful with here is, you know, especially if you're a starter and you are nursing stuff and you're not supposed to start that night. So you take it easy a little bit. Like, you can't have any more of these games, or certainly not three of them in the short period of time that we had, where it's supposed to be a night off and it doesn't end up being a night off. And that's going to be on Spencer Martin to make sure that he battles through and doesn't end up, you know, having to put Thatcher in a position of coming off the bench. Because that definitely, as much as three games doesn't sound like much, that did not help matters last year.
Now, I want to get into Martin because it just feels like we have this uber confidence in him, even though, you know, he doesn't have the longest of track records, but it sounds to me that the way Thatcher Demko gets better is like the Canucks play better in front of him, right? Pretty much. Like that's the simple way of putting it.
I guess. If you have faith in that happening, yeah. Then, you know, like, hey, man, like,
hey,
like,
systems, man, I Woodley, they're making tweaks. They got in new assistant coaches.
Hey, like Bruce said, they were top five, you know, since he took over defensively. And, you know, like, again, at the end of the year, they were 27th in expected goals against, you know, like 27th, all categories. And their PK actually was an area where, you know, the underlying numbers weren't as bad as the results, even early. Mm-hmm. But overall, they're not flattering defensively. And so, yeah, of course, that is one of the things. And interestingly enough, that's an, like, if they were to all of a sudden become a Barry Trotz, not that I expected, but a Barry Trotz style team, or a, well, even a Daryl Sutter Calgary Flames style team. Like, that actually would be an adjustment for Thatcher Demko. We talked about that with Markstrom, how going from being busy and in rhythm all the time to, you know, not seeing very many shots, like, that's a big adjustment. So, but in general, yes, like, fewer great A's, you know, fewer nights where you're asked to stand on your head and bail them out, and, you know, you're left panting and exhausted by the end of it, would probably be a good thing for the goaltender.
Well, you know, the interesting thing too about the Canucks last season, it wasn't really so much shots against, because I think they were 13th in the league, or they allowed the 13 most shots against, which is not an absurd number when you look at the range they were in. It was really the quality scoring chances. So,
yeah.
Like, so when it comes down to it, it's not so much about the volume; it's about, can you find a way to reduce the quality of those scoring chances? And we heard JT Miller talk about how he can be better defensively and how he can be better and make a better impact in that regard, and let's say he's able to, say, break even in terms of the chance differential, so instead of being in the red like he and many of the players were this past year. I mean, it seems like the biggest thing for them isn't so much suppressing shots, it's the quality that they have to not allow.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's again, like expected goals and the metrics that I referenced, mm-hmm. this was largely about quality, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Travis used to sort of say a lot on nights where there was a ton of shots. He'd talk about how many of them were from the outside, and he wasn't wrong. But there were also a lot from the inside. Mm-hmm. And again, more than you'd like, more than most teams give up, more than most teams find acceptable. And so, and it's not just location. We talk about inside and outside. It's the types of plays. It's predictable environment. Like, and that's the thing. Even within the best analytics metrics in terms of measuring shot quality, and I would put the ClearSight stuff up there with anything. Even within that, the one thing that it can't measure that we don't know is what's the system willing to give up? And are the mm-hmm. defensemen and the goaltender on the same page there? And are they executing it? Like, and I always point to Connor Hellebuck with the Jets in his Vezina year as one of those things where, yeah, there were a lot of quote-unquote high-danger chances by most measurements because they were good looks coming straight at him. But there was not a lot of laterals, right? Like, that was a spot where they gave up what looked like high-danger chances, and in some cases they were. But they knew what they were giving up, and they wouldn't give up anything else. So that a guy like Hellebuck, who one-on-one in straight lines is arguably one of the best goalies in the league, could just sit on those and not have to worry about the unpredictability of another pass and another pass or another seam being open. And so, you know, that doesn't always show up even in the ClearSight metric. So I think there's a little bit of that in Vegas over the years where, you know, I talk about the Boris system and leaning heavily on goaltending. I think talking to the goaltenders, yeah, they gave up a lot of great A's, but they knew where they were coming from. And so that's part of it as well. It's not just how much we give up and from where, but are we all on the same page on what that's going to look like? And can the goaltender make a read? Is it predictable? Can they count on it again and again and again to be, I mean, it's not perfect, but more limited, less unpredictable than it has been for the past couple of years here.
Yeah, and then you can anticipate where the shot's coming from and get your lateral movement going,
right? Yeah, I mean, you make
reads,
right? Like, your reads become mm-hmm. easier that way.
Yeah. Kevin Woodley, our guest. So, Spencer Martin, where's your confidence level in Martin being able to carry on what he did last year? And do you expect him to be the backup all year long?
Well, I mean, if anybody's expecting him to post a 950, then
okay,
like that's just unrealistic. Like, he was unreal, man.
Okay,
like,
fine. All right, I'm expecting 935. All right,
like not just, and they were like, remember, wasn't the first game Florida?
Yeah.
Like, and they just came here. They came into town in wagon mode, right? Like,
yeah.
and they absolutely, like, chance wise, they had a ton. And I think they also hit some posts there, right? So, listen, it's a small sample. There is a lot of reasons to say, wow, this is a big risk, like, just because of the sample size. But I just think understanding the process he's gone through to get to here, talking to him about the work he's put into to knowing that it's not, hey, I'm here and I can just rest on my laurels now. I have a fair bit of faith. Again, 950 is a high bar, and I think that's obviously unrealistic for anyone. But yeah, I have faith in the changes he made being things that should lead to more continued success. There is a high pedigree there. He never got opportunities. At each step of the way, he sort of added elements to his game that were lacking when he got drafted in the third round. And some things clicked in Tampa, and then some more things clicked here. I mean, you know, he's not the only one. I talked to guys around the league, Scott Wedgwood, who I would predict to be sort of a guy who could come out of the woodwork and have another really good season after second half being excellent in Dallas. Charlie Lindgren, who I think might end up being the signing of the summer, just based on 3 years at 1.1 in Washington for all the fanfare that Kemper got as the number one. I really like that as a backup job who could play a lot of minutes for Lindgren. And Spencer Martin, they all made similar changes to their game. There were elements of the way they approach things that just don't work anymore in the NHL. And it wasn't until they arrived in new spots. For Spencer, it was here. For Lindgren, it was St. Louis. For Wedgwood, actually, it happened within the same team. It started in Arizona with a change he made, I want to say, late January. But just things in their game that they'd always done a certain way that just don't work anymore. And somebody introduces a new concept to you in terms of stance and movement patterns, and all of a sudden everything simplifies. Mm-hmm. And does that mean it's going to stay that simple the whole time? No, the game will get more complicated. Teams will go to school on what you're doing. They will try and attack perceived weaknesses. But these are guys who had a lot of talent and were pretty highly regarded at one point. Lindgren was coveted as a, you know, a college free agent. We talked about Martin's, you know, third round draft pick. It's not like he was like a out of nowhere undrafted guy. And it just took a voice to sort of unlock a different element in their game. And I think he's found that here. And, you know, he's come in and sort of embraced the changes under Curtis Sanford. He continues to embrace them under Ian Clark. And so I guess maybe you have faith in the goalie department, even though it's a small sample, that if there are ups and downs and hiccups, there's a level of excellence that's expected here, that's demanded here, that they're going to continue to push for. And you have in both Martin and Colin Delia, two guys who are on board with it. Like, they're not just going to say, ah, to hell with this guy.
Yeah.
I'm just going back to my way. Like, they're on board. They understand it. Delia talked about seeing Spencer Martin play a game last year and going, oh, hold on. That's not the same guy anymore. Mm-hmm. Something's changed, and wanting to get in on that. And so it gives me more confidence that they'll be able to sort of have that success moving forward.
Is it actually a competition between Delia and Martin, considering how short training camp is, only 3 days, and once you get the games in for Demko, a couple games in for Martin, does he actually have a chance to beat out Martin, or is he just here for say, depth, and in case injuries happen through training camp, and he's most likely going to start in Abbotsford?
I don't know that either extreme is fair. I think that, because I do think that Spencer Martin's going to be the backup to start the season, mm-hmm. but I don't think that Colin's here just to be depth. Like, yeah, I mean, he is an insurance policy of sorts for sure, but he's also a guy that I think they see similar potential in. Colin is powerful on the ice. Like, he has an engine and he has a ton of horsepower. And in the past, he would just sort of load his edges and push hard from spot to spot. And like, it was not one push and you're done, but you see a lot of these short shuffles and movements that the Canucks use. Like, it was a very different style. Like, he was very much locked into his inside edges, and everything here is about sort of keeping your edges underneath you and not locking in on the inside and using, you know, rotating that ankle and using flat shuffles and beating plays, staying square. And so again, there's a guy that they think his skill set will translate very well with the changes they are asking him to make. And so in the short term, maybe there's a bit of a learning curve before it becomes innate, like there was for Spencer Martin last year. And so maybe at the beginning, yeah, he definitely probably starts in Abbotsford and goes through that learning curve down there a little bit. But they see similar upside. Whether it ends up being with the Canucks, if there's injuries or Spencer, you know, stubs his toe at all, or whether it becomes as an asset at the trade deadline as these changes start to become innate and hopefully the success follows. Like, they picked him based on elements of his game that they see, fixable is the wrong word, but maybe things that they think within their system and their style of coaching will sort of allow him to have more success. So he's not just here to be fodder, to be depth chart guy. Like, they think they see him as a guy who could, you know, have a nice arc as the season goes on, which provides you with depth, yes, but could have some really pleasant upside at the end of it too, whether it's here or, like I said, whether he just becomes an asset for you.
Woodley, you're the best. Thanks for this.
I appreciate it, boys. We'll talk to you next week.
There's Kevin Woodley, NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. I am being called out, Sat. Apparently.
So who's calling you out?
The people. Believe I spread false controversy. This started yesterday.
Controversy.
After my Vasily Podkolzin take that maybe the hype is getting a little too out of control, mm-hmm. which spare me. Oh, my. I think Vancouver fans are getting a little too much about a good quality, high talent young player.
Yeah, in fairness, the players themselves are hyping Podkolzin up more than anyone.
Okay, that's true.
Yes.
That's true. But I'm not spreading false controversy. It's just a take believe.
It's a take.
Hype is getting a little too much.
It's an honest take.
Relative to what Podkolzin will likely produce mm-hmm. this year as a player. So, okay, I'm a false controversy spreader now.
Yeah.
But as we just led into the interview with Kevin Woodley, I threw out that Thatcher Demko is not seen as a top five goalie by people that rank goalies in the offseason around the league, and I threw out NHL and NHL Network. Well, one of our listeners intrepidly found the list, and Demko...
A lot of hard work went into searching NHL.com.
Yes, found that Demko was number six on the list.
Six.
So I'm spreading false controversy by saying they put him in the top 10, but not the top five, which I don't know. Is six in the top five? Am I wrong here?
Let me see. One, two, three, four, five. My quick math says no.
Yeah. And there are other lists that have him lower in the top 10.
My math indicates that six is outside the top five.
So.
No!
I just I wanna be honest with everybody that I'm not spreading false controversy.
So top 10, but not top five.
Yeah, controversy.
Yeah, I mean fact only. You're right.
I am surprised that NHL.com did have him as high as number six. So I will say that.
Next time you should say top 20.
Top 20 goaltender.
Yep.
Not top wrong. 30 starter.
Yeah.
The hockey writers have Thatcher Demko at number eight. There you go.
What do the writers know? And the hockey writers are not actual hockey writers. No, I mean, they are hockey writers, but it's not like the
they're just catching strength.
It's not like the PHWA. It's like a blog called the Hockey Writers. It's not like the hockey writers as an association were together and believe, you know, like they're putting it out. It's not like all the hockey writers got together and ranked all the goalies.
I'm a hockey writer occasionally.
Yes.
All right. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We are Canuck Central. Coming up, hour two, the storylines you need to care about going into training camp in Whistler. Brendan Batchelor will give his take on that as well. Plus, still to come, overrated or underrated. It's a busy Wednesday here on Canuck Central. You're listening on Sportsnet 650.